Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Tori, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today is Friday, June 2nd. Thank you for joining us.
Thank God it's Friday.
Yes, it is. It is. We can't forget that, right?
No.
You know, the reality is lately I've not been looking forward to weekends that much. I mean, You may get to sleep in a couple hours, but I'm having more fun working.
Oh, hey, that should be a goal for everybody.
Yeah, maybe because I don't have anything to do on the weekend.
So we need to change that.
I know. I don't know how. I need to find romance.
Yeah, I know. I think obviously we know what nothing on the weekend is. Yeah, you need a partner.
You need a partner.
Is there any chance that you would A, go speed dating, and B, let me come along so I could watch?
Yes.
I would totally do that with you. I would watch that.
All right, let me find out about
it. Okay, because I think that would help your attention span.
Yeah.
You have a bell. Have you been to it? You sit down. There's a hot or not hot person next to you.
Exactly.
And you only get 5 minutes or something. And then they go bing. And then
I love that.
Right.
Yeah, I love that.
This is such up your alley.
Right. Yeah. It's like we don't have to waste any time.
This
is
like made for you. I'm not even sure they still do these, but I think they do. You got to do these, Sam. This
I know.
Is
I want
right
to try
it
at least once.
Yeah.
And my question is this, though. So they match you only if both of you decide afterwards that...
So here's what happens. You have a piece of paper next to you, like fucking bingo.
Uh-huh.
And if you like the chick, you write something on the like on her thing.
Right.
And then if she matched with you, you find out, you get her phone number.
I see. Okay, cool.
Yeah, but it's a good way for you to see the person, connect, but it's short.
I know.
That's a great idea.
And you figure you almost have a sure thing there, you know. I
mean, somehow, something's got to work.
Yeah, right?
At least also, it's a good icebreaker because you can be like, how awkward is this? You know, it's a really good icebreaker.
I know.
Instead of like, hey, what do you do with your life?
Yeah.
Have some coffee.
Get me turned on this now. I'm going to do it. I know a few people that that do this. Some of our dating coaches and stuff, they do that sometimes.
You have. I think it's a great idea.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for that. And I'll make sure you can be in the audience.
Oh, my God. I don't think there's an audience, first of all. If there is, though, could I be in front row? That would just be the most entertaining thing.
Yeah.
You're like, Tori, stop bringing popcorn into the speed dating. And I'm just like, show me more.
You're not supposed to be watching us.
Exactly.
We're not performing here.
Exactly.
But that's fun. Yeah, because I've given up on all those dating apps. I don't even use them anymore.
Yeah, I feel like you need something more in person.
Yeah, in
but
person.
This is a good way of doing it, kind of shortened.
Right.
There's also these dinners where you can go and everyone's single, like single dinners, and then if two people, I don't know if I like that. That might be cool too.
It might, because there's no pressure really.
Exactly.
You know,
it's just
a group.
Exactly. It's like a party. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So I'll find out some info on this.
Okay, but they probably have age groups and shit. I don't like that.
No, also,
that's why
I don't know why.
To those groups.
I know, you're like, wait.
Groups.
You're like, I don't want.
Yeah, don't put me in the, you know, 55 and
I
over.
I would think speed dating though is all ageless. It's just like whoever wants to be
I
part of it.
I don't think so.
Really?
I don't think so, yeah, because they figure, you know, they're not going to put someone 20 years apart together.
Yeah, maybe not.
And yeah, because
so you know what you should do is crash the 20 years younger one. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. No, I don't mind. You know, I mean, I was thinking yesterday, I said, look, you know, it's like, what's this attractiveness to young people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you realize the lifestyle is different. It's more like carefree. Even when you're married in your 30s and shit like that, you know, in your 20s, it's still like, I mean, you have responsibility. But you're not carrying as big a load as you do at my age.
Totally.
So I think that's attractive. That's appealing.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, younger people are more attractive, right?
But I was thinking
that attractiveness, though.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal. Because the thing is, the rest of the person is what you have to deal with. And I think people that are more mature and stuff, there's, you know, closer to your age, maybe there's more. Although I don't have any problem. I mean, look, you're 35, I'm 57. We sit here, we have no problem talking.
I mean, I'm gonna cringe for like a half a second, but I don't have any problem.
Yeah, you know, so
kind
that's
of.
The thing.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've had co-hosts in their 20s and we were able to communicate. So that's not the case there, you know.
Yeah.
But people look at age difference, they go, wow, you know, because maybe when people are looking to get married and stuff, they figure, well, this is not going to work.
I think the most important thing is this. Do you have anything in common?
Right.
And that is just the be all end all look at it. And when I come down to it, my philosophy is if you guys agree on three things, it'll work out. And I don't mean be the same on these three things, but you agree like you're facing the same direction on these three things.
Right.
I think you have to have the same philosophy on sex. If you're kinky and they're not, it's a little weird. So that's, I think you have to have the same philosophy. You have to have on religion. I think you don't have to be the same religion, but have a philosophy and a moral code that is symbiotic to each other.
Right. And politics,
finally,
then?
No.
No?
Money.
Because people...
Money.
People have divorced after the elections, but...
Oh, yeah.
Money, you're saying, is important in a relationship.
In terms of not money, what's important in terms of you're facing the same way and how you deal with money. If one person is very frugal and one tends to spend, it's not going to work out, in my opinion. Mm. So if you agree
on those...
But don't
you think one complements the other, though? Because what happens if you have two spenders, then...
I don't mean like you need two big... I'm saying your philosophy on money is the same, so that like they're fine spending money, they just don't choose to.
Right.
Like I've just seen money, religion, and sex, those three. If you're not kind of on the same page in terms of how you want to spend it, maybe you don't... My dad is very frugal, and my mom is not. However, I mean, my dad's not frugal, but he doesn't spend a lot on himself. My mom does. However, they both have the same philosophy on money,
right,
which is like enjoy it, spend it because you're alive when you can.
Right, yeah.
So that worked out.
I agree on the money and the sex, but you know, as far as the religion, for many people, it's not even... It's not even in the equation, you know. They don't even discuss it, so
maybe,
it doesn't really matter.
But see, that's what I mean. I mean, on the same page, meaning it's not a big deal.
Like it's not a big
deal. So, but what if one is very religious and one
isn't? The other
one's
not
exactly
a big deal.
So, I just mean on the same page, meaning they don't have to be the same. They can be Catholic. I'm Jewish. My husband's Catholic, but we have the same feelings towards what religion means to our family and what we want it to be. You know what I mean?
Gotcha.
Yeah. So those are, and what I'm saying about all this is, not an older person, but someone closer to your age is going to have those three things more in common probably with you, and having to do fun things with you than someone in their 20s, right?
Yeah.
So that's when, you know, when you have a partner, you get bored by someone who doesn't have anything in common with
you. That's true. You have to be compatible too. It's not just the having in common, but compatible temperament,
chemistry,
personalities, you know, things like that.
It's almost like this insult. You can't see it, but you can feel it.
Right, right. Like sort of like a magnet or something.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
Know? If you repel each other.
Not a good thing.
Not a good thing. You know?
Yeah, that's what I find.
Yeah. In a few minutes, we're going to be called by not one, but two authors of the same book called Wealth Can't Wait. And I love this. This is going to be how to avoid wealth traps, implement the business, seven business pillars, and complete a life audit today. Wow, that's pretty cool. So we're going to talk about money today, which is cool.
Which is weird. We already was just talking about money.
That's true, right?
That was weird.
Yeah. So, but that will be cool because... we don't often talk about money here, right?
Yeah, and also I love that like people, I was telling you about that book, Designing Your Life, which I really recommend. The Stanford professors, they are mechanical engineers and they teach a course on life using mechanical engineering.
Yeah.
So this is the same thing, like using audits for your life. Same kind of thing, like synthesis of two different departments. I love that stuff.
Yeah.
And also, who doesn't want to get wealthy?
I know.
Make it rain.
And I'm reading about the two authors, and they're very wealthy, both of them. You know,
well, I would hope. I would hope.
Yeah. Yeah, well, they're starting to call, so we might as well take the calls now, because otherwise we may get an entire confusion here. Good morning. You're on the air. Who's calling us exactly? We're waiting for two calls. Who is this?
It's Paul Morris.
Paul Morris,
good morning. How are you? We're waiting for David to call in as well. So I just wanted to make sure we have the right ones. It'll be hard to keep up with which voice is which name, but we'll try and do our best. Paul, good morning to you. Where are you calling us from this morning?
Santa Monica.
Oh,
you're in Southern California. That's cool. And so you're enjoying the beautiful weather and everything. I see that you've been an investor in real estate, right? Tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, I started off my first investment in real estate was more than 25 years ago, and it was buying a duplex and fixing it up, holding it for a while. And that was really the start of a long journey of buying and mainly buying, fixing up and holding. So not a flip, deal. And then I also pursued a separate track of just going through school, getting a business degree, law degree, practicing law for a little while, and then realizing that that wasn't the path for me.
Yeah.
A lot of my friends who are lawyers say, yeah, the same thing. They're like, it's not the fat.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, Paul, hang on a second because we're joined by David. David, are you with us?
I am with you guys.
Hi.
Awesome. Welcome to the show, David. We're speaking to Paul. He just gave us a little bit of background. And David, where are you? David Osborne, by the way, where are you calling us from this morning?
Austin, Texas. It's about 85 degrees out here today, and we're just getting ready for another hot summer season.
I know. So are we.
Yeah, we are too. Austin is the coolest.
Yeah. But you see, Paul
it
knows where to live,
city.
You know.
We love it.
Yeah.
Santa Monica is where it's at. You know, the weather's perfect there in the summer.
You know, if it wasn't for the traffic, I would live in L.A. I can't take the traffic.
I got to be honest. The traffic sucks.
it's a major stress.
It here, really right? is. People like, we're losing cool people because of it.
Everyone's coming here and our traffic's starting to suck.
I was going
to
say Austin.
You know,
that's
the way things are. They're packing them in here. We got like 160,000 people a year moving in here. So we're going to double in the next 15 years, I think, or maybe 25 years.
Yeah, everyone and their mother wants to go to Austin.
I know, and it's a beautiful place too, but it's obviously got to grow. It's going to grow a lot.
I think it's grown. I like it. I would move there in a second. Yeah.
So at any rate, before we get into the book, guys, how did you guys meet? You're different parts of the country. How did you meet to collaborate? Did you know each other before you decided to write the book together? Go ahead, Paul.
David started with Keller Williams Realty before me, and he had the master franchise for the Los Angeles area. And when I first started to explore the idea of opening a brokerage office, I was looking at different brands and different models. I met David as one of the real founders of the company, certainly with respect to moving it across the country, and definitely one of the most successful people in the company. And I met David in that context, and we just started doing business from that point forward.
Very interesting. And David, how did you view this? I mean, was this like when Paul came up? How did this feel for you? What were you looking at?
You know, he started off by buying a franchise in a master franchise territory that I'd owned. And then he became very successful. And the more I got to know him, the more I liked him. Uh-huh. I was planning on writing a book on wealth for a long time. And one day I shared that with him over dinner. And he said, wow, that's interesting. I'm thinking of writing a book on wealth as well. And we talked all night about it. And then we started, we decided to write it together as opposed to separately.
How cool is that?
This is so cool. So I still feel like a young person because I'm immature. And I just wanted to ask about something I think a lot of people are thinking about. The millennial generation in college, and you just get out of college. And I saw there's some seven traps. Is there like three or like major points of advice that you guys would give to someone who is not trying to live in their mother's basement, let's say? Like a lot of kids these days have spent so much in college. What's like your top advice for that generation?
Mm. Well, I would start off by saying you can't just get there by only holding a job. You've got to figure out something to do on the side, something you're passionate about. Mm. Something where you can make some extra money. You're not going to get there if you're a bartender, say, by all means stay a bartender, but figure out some angle that you can do on the side, whether it's selling something on eBay or being a real estate agent on the side. There's you can't do it with just one tack anymore. You got to have multiple tacks.
Right.
Yeah, that's so true.
And you got to take risk.
And now I think now with with the internet bringing so many different opportunities to so many different people, that now more than ever, people talk about their side gig or the thing or their side hustle.
Yeah.
And you know, just to follow up with David's point, you know, and that's one of the first wealth traps that we talk about is staying with a comfortable job. Especially for someone like me, I spent a lot of time getting the education that I was getting and then going out and being a lawyer. And it a lot of people inside of that will just stay in their job. They get a good paycheck.
Sure.
And they're not doing that side hustle. They're not looking for another way to create wealth.
That's right. So funny, because like on Twitter, and I'm always someone trying to find SEO keywords to get more followers because I'm a vain human being. Mm-hmm. They often yeah. say side hustle is trending a lot. And side hustle is like mm-hmm. this new word that is like made out of necessity because we all need it. Yeah.
Wow.
It's great that you are actually, you know, want to be, you know, have a lot of followers. The question I would ask you is, what are you going to do with that? So keep pursuing that.
Yeah.
Because that's a great, you want to go where your passions lie. So if your passion is to have 2 million Twitter followers at the same time as you're doing that, try to figure out strategically, what's my purpose with this? How can I monetize this? Where does this go for me? Because the sooner you have a purposeful plan for your life and stay on focus, that's the one thing we noticed. Successful people have a purposeful plan. It changes, it adapts as life goes on,
right.
but they're not just aimlessly pursuing things right. with no outcome goals. So develop right. the ability to have a purpose around your Twitter followers.
Well, what's funny is now I'm trying mm-hmm. to be a host, really, and every time I go to an audition, they literally have your name, your email, your agent, and now a different line, and it's how many followers you have on social media. So
wow.
now it's become a flippin' necessity yeah. to have those to get to my purpose.
It's like social currency.
It's exactly what it is, Sam. That's a great way of saying it. So in terms of social media, is there stuff with wealth that you guys see intertwining with social currency, or is that kind of separate?
I think the answer to that is a follow-up. It's a follow-up with David's comment on yeah. on having a purpose. So
yeah.
there definitely is when we look at another section in the book, which is building businesses that build wealth. The first key to that is client acquisition. And no matter what business we're in, there are a few businesses that are not necessarily wealth building businesses, but almost all wealth building businesses require you to have clients.
Yeah.
And so if you're running a radio show or you want to be a talk show host,
right.
your clients are the massive audience, or you build this massive audience so that your clients who are paying you, actually the advertisers, are
well, radio is a little more complicated. I hear exactly what you're saying. You know, I mean, the market is really not the listeners. The listeners are almost like the inventory, the audience. That's the product. That's what you're offering. But the advertisers, by all means, what you're saying is first of all, I think what David was saying is that you got to be focused, right? You got to have focus. You don't want to go all over the place. Be like a laser point, you know, and just follow what mm-hmm. it is that you want to do, and then
right.
Go ahead, Paul.
You mentioned earlier about kids getting out of college, and I wonder, you know, when you go to college, you pick a major, and they kind of design the coursework for you.
Yeah.
Life is really you picking your own major, yeah. designing your own course, and deciding where you want to go. Sometimes I wonder if college is worth it if
right.
you come out owing $200,000.
Yeah. Exactly.
That was my next question.
How long you got to live with your mom?
Yeah, right. That's right. That's my next question.
There's so much information out there you can get for free.
So what do you guys think about that? Is that a viable option anymore? Which it's so crazy to think of, because my dad went to Yale and then Harvard, and I didn't get in, so fuck that. But whatever. I went to University of Michigan, which is go blue, very, very good. But there was not a question I wouldn't go to college. And within a generation, it's like, well, wait a minute. Why the hell do you have to go if you're going to be in debt and you don't need it for a side hustle?
Right.
So what do you guys feel about college?
So when I went to University of Texas, I think it was like $4,000 a semester, right?
Yeah.
Or maybe $2,000. It was cheap. Might have been $4,000 for the year. Now the University of Texas is like $20,000 a semester. And that's what I think is unrealistic of these colleges. They've raised their prices so high.
Yeah.
And at the same time, the internet has created all this information. So you have all this information on the internet. You can pretty much educate yourself without doing any college. So the value proposition, I don't think, is there anymore.
Yeah.
Now, it's great for social. Of course, if you're going to Harvard, well, you're going to make contacts.
Yeah,
those
networking.
Connections can be lifelong valuable.
Yeah,
but at the end of the day, I think college has gotten too expensive and they need to dial it back. And I wouldn't tell someone not to go to college. I would just say consider with great seriousness whether college is going to serve you on your journey. If you don't know what you're going to do, maybe college is good. But if you're clear already, maybe now you get after it and think about college later.
And then, and you're ahead of the game, like if you're not going to,
Now, so what I wanted to ask, Paul, do you think, like, you know, other than the side job and everything like this, this is like where... What you're saying is people have to have, like, focus on something else because just the paycheck is not going to make you rich.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And one of the things, it was really the reason that I started teaching wealth building. And that's it. David and I run these brokerages, and we have a vast sales force. And a lot of the focus is teaching the salespeople how to increase their sales, and increasing their sales is increasing their income. And then what I find is we spend out, you know, we can outspend or spend up to no matter what we earn. And so an increasing income does not equal increasing wealth. So that was the whole idea behind it. And a job with a paycheck is just that. So David and I talk about vertical and horizontal income streams, and the passive income is when you're putting your money to work for you, so that you're receiving, even if it's a small amount of money, you're investing in something that's paying a dividend that works for you even while you're not working. So that's the concept.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. You know, and going back to the college thing, Tori, you know, I think that They price so many people out of the market, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but then what happens is that all these kids go for, you know, for support, financial support and everything. And what happens is they start their lives right after
school. They're in the red. They're in the red.
Already in debt.
That's what I'm saying.
A couple $100,000.
Yeah. So you're already starting with a loaded debt.
Exactly. Yeah. How can you possibly? And I'm sure you guys in your book address the subject of debt, because I think that's like the biggest evil, right?
Debt, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's good debt and bad debt. Good debt is when you borrow money to make more money. That's positive leverage. So you buy a rental property, and because you were able to borrow $200 from the bank, you were able to buy a $250,000 house that you otherwise couldn't afford, and then you have a payment that covers your debt and makes you a little extra money. That's good debt. Bad debt is like you owe $200,000 for student loans, and you've just got to make a payment of $3,000 a month whether you go to work or not.
Wow.
And that eats you up. So I have two young kids, and honestly, I don't know that I would tell them to go to college.
I know.
Right?
And they'll be lucky enough to have me pay for it. But even with that, I'm not sure that... And I'm not saying I'm against it either. I'm just saying the value proposition has to change for me to get excited about walking out the door with $200,000 worth of debt. Because that $200,000 could be $20,000 a year passive income if invested wisely.
Right.
And then you'd be to the plus instead of the minus.
Right. It's like, it's what's so strange to me, though, is it's the pros and cons, what you're saying. And you're like, well, the value system is off now. It did this in one generation. Mm. Like, it's just insane. Right. It was starting when I was going to college. But it's to hear someone say, and to me agree, I wouldn't necessarily advocate my kids going to college. Right. That's how bad it's gotten. That's crazy.
That's true, right?
Yeah. That's shocking.
It's shocking. One generation.
Right. It's shocking.
Yeah,
it's, one generation.
Yeah, it's very strange. But yeah, I agree with you 100%.
And also,
the pros aren't there.
Go ahead. Also, there's a positive to it, too. There's a positive to it, too, and it's not necessarily how bad that has gotten. It's how much great stuff there is out there relative to... relative to the old way of education. I mean, just Wikipedia alone. I have conversations over the dinner table with my daughter, and we're like, oh, we're not sure about this, that, or the other thing. There's no going to the library in a few days and pulling books out and researching it.
Right.
You just put the information is so available and powerful that I believe it's going to generate a whole nother evolution of growth that's going to take place exponentially.
Yeah, I think
you're right, Paul. Yeah,
go ahead, David.
Sorry, go ahead,
David.
Paul's right, though. I mean, the value, all the great knowledge I've gotten, one of the things we put in the book is learn for a lifetime. You learn to earn. The more you know, the more you're going to get paid. And there's so much, all the knowledge I've got that has served me, I got after college. And now in college, I got a school that I can root for. I get to pull for the Longhorns.
Yeah, me too. I'm like, go Wolverines. Yeah, me too. Yeah, exactly.
But macroeconomics doesn't help me on a day-to-day basis, right. But learning to sell and manage in real estate does. And I read two great books about that, and those books have served me for a lifetime. They cost me $10 at the bookstore, you know, back in those days.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Well, the book is Wealth Can't Wait. When did you guys, was this just published?
Yeah, it came out in April, we were New York Times bestseller for the month of April, number 7. Ooh, and we
that's
just,
awesome.
It took us 7 years to write it. It's been a labor of love, blood, sweat, tears, and love.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Congratulations. That's fantastic.
Yes, absolutely.
What do you guys mean when you say wealth can't wait?
Like to start it now?
Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things, you know, and the title, it's funny that we loved the title and we weren't sure, and now, you know, and then we loved it again, and the piece in it for me is to create a sense of urgency.
Yeah.
And so that's create a sense of urgency, create a sense of awareness, and really what it is that time just passes by. And we can create the purpose of our life. We can get on with what the creation of our lives is. It's not necessarily, we define wealth so broadly that it includes, you know, wealth of relationships and wealth of love and wealth of contribution.
Mm-hmm.
And so our goal is to put the tools that have taken us really a lifetime to learn into, you know, digestible pieces that can give folks who read our book a real jump start to creating a life that they love as they live it.
Yeah, like wealth is a mindset.
And if you're gonna have that life if you're gonna have that life that Paul just described, why would you wait? I mean, the thing about wealth is once you commit to your life, your journey, wealth equals freedom. Why wouldn't you start right away? Because every day you put into it, you go further, you get further.
That's true, right? Mm-hmm. So you guys convey this message in your book. And I would imagine you direct a lot of it to the younger generation who really are just getting started now and thinking, oh, I can wait. You know, I'm young. You know, it's going to happen. You're saying, you know, and that's one thing about young people. I'm saying they're so rich because they have time. They have so much time ahead of them. And, you know, as you get older, you have less and less time to achieve all that. Right?
But the thing about being young also, Sam, is you should try lots of different things and you should get started. Don't just coast through life. Don't sleepwalk through it.
Yeah.
But try different things. Try your side hustles. Try whatever you like and then find the place where you can thrive. But don't just get a job that's okay, that pays you a decent paycheck, and then think your life revolves around the weekends.
Right.
Get after it now. And and that's what we try to encourage them to do in the book.
There you go.
Wealth can't wait. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that.
One of the things that I really want to share with you and your listeners before we finish today is just that it is one of the wealth traps, and it ties into this notion of get started. And I believe that one of the reasons why people sit on the sidelines is they're afraid to make mistakes.
100%. Yes.
Yes. And one of the wealth traps is don't victimize yourself. So if you are afraid of making a mistake, and one of the reasons is, you know, you step out there, you do the wrong thing, it doesn't work out for you, boy, you're going to beat yourself up worse than you would if you did nothing at all. And that's why people sit on the sidelines. That's the victimizing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And what David and I have found is that in stepping out there, as long as you're willing and open to the lesson that's in that, then you get miles ahead even by stepping out and making a mistake. And when we talk about millennials, you know, there's also this notion that people have about millennials of the, you know, get rich instantly. And we've always said when we did our book that it's not a get rich quick scheme, that it's really a roadmap. And one of the perspectives in that is that people generally overestimate what they can accomplish in a short time. And then they also underestimate what they can accomplish in the long term. So when I taught, when I think about, well, I want to build a, I want to have a real estate portfolio. Well, how do you do that when you're working a job? And, you know, how do you build a real estate portfolio as your side hustle? People can understand, well, I'm going to build an app. And the way you build a real estate portfolio as your side hustle is buy one piece of property. And maybe it doesn't even work out for you. And you spent 6, 7, 8 months learning and doing, putting all this effort in, you break even. You've, that's where you've gotten your education. So that's the message that that I'd love to leave for your listeners.
Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, take some risks too. Yeah, you have to get, put yourself out there.
I know, and it makes sense, you know, but now I'm realizing this book is going to make you actually take action, you know, and that's the important thing rather than just thinking about things. You got to make them happen.
And what's really interesting, it's hard for a book to have urgency. I know that sounds weird, but like it is weird to have a book these days make you want to take action because you have everything, you have virtual reality, like, right? But that's a, it's a great way of saying like you don't have a lot of time. You have to, you have to have some urgency. I think it was a good title.
Right. And folks,
thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wealth Can't Wait. Folks, and it seems to be you know, a pretty popular book.
Yeah.
Not pretty popular, but very popular. I mean, you guys are doing very well on Amazon. I did want to ask you, do you guys like get, I mean, do you pay a lot of attention to the customer reviews on places like Amazon?
That's a great question.
Yeah, I do. And you know, what's funny is we're our own hardest critic generally as entrepreneurs. And we have one on there that's the 2-star. And the guy says, if you, you know, if you, you may as well just read Tony Robbins' book if you're going to read this book. All this stuff from Tony Robbins. And I'm thinking to myself, that's a compliment, you know, because Tony Robbins learned it from Jim Rohn. Jim Rohn learned it from Nightingale Conan. And from my point of view, like all we are in life is trying to pass wisdom from one generation to the next. And if we can have a book that that helps people go further in life, no matter where we got that information from, there's not original thought. What there is a well put together book that gives you a lot of wisdom and then compels you to take action. And if that is achieved in this book, I'm actually proud of that. I almost want to take his criticism and put it up as an endorsement.
Right. Yeah, you should frame
we're
it.
Mostly positive. So.
Yeah.
But notice how human nature, you know, you've got like what, 70-some, 80 reviews you got on here, but you remember the one with the 2-star, right?
That's how everyone
because
is.
I know. Yeah. It like really bothers you. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's how you stand out, you know. Maybe sometimes people do it just so you can look at what they have to say, and they're just, you know, they're haters or something. I don't know, but. But look, focus on the thing. I mean, I'm just scrolling down the page. Everything is 5 stars. You guys are doing amazing. Just to get 80 reviews is a big deal. And you guys obviously...
It's number 7 on the New York Times bestseller.
It's a big deal book. You know? Yeah. I mean, when I'm looking at the cover, I recall seeing it in the bookstore a couple weeks
ago.
Well,
I'm going to go get it. And I have to get the hardcover because I can't... I'm an old person and I can't figure out how to... I mean, I can figure it out, but I like to have the book in my hand.
Yes, yes. And that's the best way to do it, guys. Well, and you go on Amazon, you get it for half the price almost. So,
Tori, we'd love you to go out and buy it on Amazon. And you all have been so wonderful. We will... we're definitely going to send you...
Yeah.
We're going to send you a signed copy of the book.
Oh, wow, cool, man. I'm looking forward to that. You know, I mean,
and also if you want to, I don't know if you guys do this or not, but if you want to offer some to your readers as well, or to your listeners as well, you know, we would be happy to work with you on that. You've got a fabulous show, and you were awesome interviewers.
David and I
have done this with, you know, a bunch of people. We really appreciate your thoughtful questions.
Of course. And please don't send any free ones for the listeners. I really want people to buy this because, no, let me tell you, because let me tell you, in business I learned something, and in personal life too. Even though I know people and they offer me their services for free, I always offer to pay because if you don't, it's sort of like you undervalue what they do. You know, it's like you're telling them, you know what you're doing is not worth the money, so give it to me for free.
Yeah,
you know?
But people like contests.
But that's how people like to work, you know? And
it's funny. Before I wrote the book, I used to always buy books secondhand. Since I put 7 years into it, I know how hard it is to write a book. Every book I've bought since I finished this one, I bought the new one. I don't care if it's $25 and the secondhand one is brand new and $10.
Right.
I'm still buying the new one now because I appreciate the amount of effort authors put into things.
Exactly.
And that's
a
nicely said, Sam. But at the end of the day, it's more important for us that people win with the information.
Yeah.
And however they get the book, we hope they get it and they win and they take action with it.
That's awesome.
Awesome. Paul Morris, David Osborne, thank you so much for joining us. Wealth Can't Wait. Everybody, go get the book. You can't go wrong with this one.
No.
You know, and I mean, even if it's, or not even, but maybe especially later in your life, you know, running out of time, man. I mean, I keep telling myself that too.
You got to start looking more optimistically.
I got to start doing, because you know what? One thing I learned, guys, is that almost everybody I talk to that has wealth has done it with real estate one way or another.
My dad did it with
real estate. Is the easiest way to get there. There's no Facebook guys, and well, I mean, Facebook's a different way, but wealth, more money been made in real estate than any other place in the history of time.
Wow.
And all you got to do is, instead of waiting to buy real estate, you got to buy real estate and wait.
Whoa.
Right.
My mind was just blown.
And then the thing is if you can't really afford to buy something big, what are you saying? Buy as much as you can, but buy something?
But our favorite millennials are those guys that go buy a house and they have three roommates paying for them. My oldest daughter does this. I've got a couple young guys. There's a dreamer I know that already owns four houses. He's only 26 years old. And what he did is he started with his first one. It wasn't very expensive. It's not L.A. or Santa Monica, but he bought like a $100,000 house with four bedrooms. He rented out the three rooms, and not only did he not pay any of the mortgage, he made money by being in the house.
Whoa.
And he's done that now three or four times. And at 26, he's got like $1,200 a month passive coming in. So yeah, that's the way to do it if you're that way inclined. If you're going to write a new app or be a social media superstar, go do that. But real estate is one of the tools we talk about, and it's a great tool for building wealth.
Hashtag side hustle.
There you go. Guys, you've been so helpful this morning.
Thank you
so much.
That's amazing.
Congratulations on the book, and more power to you.
Thank you, guys. Thank you so much for having us.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Whoa, I got to get myself a house. What the hell?
Tori, it's about real estate, I'm telling you.
You are right. I mean, when you said that, I was like, yeah, but... And then he just chimed in like, this is the fastest
because
way
to- they both and, and they both have made it in real estate. Because I'll tell you why it's in real estate, Tori. Because you buy something that goes up in value.
Sure, of course.
And you buy a car.
Yeah, it goes...
You're investing in something that goes down in value.
The second you leave the lot.
Right, so why put cash into it?
Yeah.
That's why I say lease cars, you know, don't buy a car.
Yeah.
But something that, and then stocks, that's iffy.
Yeah, I know.
But real estate is pretty.
So
pretty
are you thinking about it?
Are you kidding? I've been thinking about it for years.
Too.
But now they're, you know what? He just gave me the greatest idea, because I'll tell you why. You think here, okay, let's say you don't have a lot of money for a down payment, right? So you're going to go, so you can't get like an expensive house. So what do you get? So you get like maybe an apartment or something, a condo. You buy that for maybe a couple hundred thousand. And then you wait for that to go up. Or what they said is it doesn't have to be Santa Monica or L.A. You know, go get one in Vegas. Wait for it to go up in value.
He said buy it and then wait. Don't wait and then buy. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. You have to sit on it, and that's how it goes up in
Vegas
value.
Vegas would be awesome for you.
Right. So what I'm saying, you don't have to live there.
Right. Of course not.
You just buy for the same $250,000. You buy a four-bedroom house that you can rent for $15,000, $20,000.
I mean, I think the idea of this is we should get the book.
Yeah. Absolutely. Get Health Can't Wait, man.
Wealth Can't Wait.
I'm sorry. Wealth Can't Wait.
Health can't either, but wealth.
I know. Yeah, Health Can't Wait either. That's true. Maybe that'll come out of it next.
But I like the idea of thinking of wealth as a mindset instead of like wealth as money dollar signs.
Right.
Because again, that thing I was telling you about, that book I read, Designing Your Life, it's the same way of transferring your power of logic to how to make money.
Right.
And the same way mechanical engineering to how to design your actual life. It's such a smart way of synthesizing those two together.
Yeah.
Well, now I got to go buy a house.
I know. Well, they're sending us the book, and we'll see how it goes. But I think also you did bring up the student loans. And I think that's a major, major problem in this country.
Yeah.
When he was describing $20,000 a semester, that's a lot of money, Tori.
So I went to Michigan, and because I'm from D.C., we don't excuse me, we don't have a university, and we still pay taxes. So we got in-state tuition for any public school in the entire country.
Really?
So I only paid like the $5,000 like in-state for a really great education. Most of those people were paying about $20,000.
Wow.
$14,000 to $20,000.
And how many semesters? Two a year, and you go 4 years, that's eight, right? So you're looking at $160,000
just straight off the bat.
Just tuition.
And then imagine textbooks. Right. And then imagine food and
living costs.
Usually you get dorm rooms for the first 2 years, but you got to pay for that. I mean, the textbooks are like thousands.
I know.
I remember the first day at Michigan.
It's all a sin, you know?
Pulling it, and I was like, this is really how this goes down? This is insane.
Right.
Hundreds and hundreds of dollars.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just wonder how textbooks... became like so expensive, and schools are so expensive, and healthcare is so expensive.
Right.
All the things that are really important.
And the wage doesn't go up.
Yeah, all the things that are really important are really expensive.
So health, education, and the thing is that if you're making a wage, usually you see when things go up, you see the wages go up because it's inflation. That's what you do. And by not raising it to a, let's say, $15 minimum wage, you're not allowing people to live not outside of poverty. You're forcing them to live in poverty.
Right, but when you're talking about inflation, then wages do go up usually with it,
but that has been a slow process for certain businesses. For instance, like fast food places still are paying like minimum wage should be at 15 across the country.
But let me ask you this, okay? Because I have a total argument against raising minimum wage, and I'll tell you why. There's a couple of reasons. First of all, you raise minimum wage, all the other wages above it have to go up too, okay? Because people are not going to, like, if someone is a manager of a McDonald's and someone is flipping the burgers, the one above him will want a higher salary as well. So what happens is you create inflation just with the salaries, with the wages. Now, okay, so let's say now they are making more money, but now McDonald's has to charge the customers more money.
But I'm saying I'm
so
very
it's the same people that you're giving more money, now the prices are higher for them. So what have you accomplished?
Basically, the idea is that people would have to pay a little bit extra so that people aren't in poverty.
No, but that's not... What do you mean?
I'm willing to pay a higher price for a burger.
But it's the same people. You see what I'm saying is...
No.
Why? I mean, the person that works at McDonald's most likely can only afford places like McDonald's.
But if they're making more money, they can then afford more things.
Like what?
Well, if you're making $15 an hour, there's a possibility that you could go get a salad somewhere else.
Yeah, but that salad would be more expensive because the salad place has to pay his employees more.
But then why keep them at a lower rate when everything else around them is going higher?
No,
how is that fair?
No. Because what I'm saying is it's not. Because, no, wages are going up. They're definitely going up with inflation. What I'm saying is, but you can't push them up artificially. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
you're hurting the same people.
That's an economic thought, and
but it's not just a thought. It's a fact. Let me show you. For example,
that's a theory. But there's another theory that says everyone pays a little bit more so that people don't have to live in poverty. So a burger now, instead of being $5, let's say is $6.50 or $7. I'm willing to pay that $1.50 so that somebody else isn't living in poverty.
Right.
So
that somebody else is going to have to pay the same higher price as you.
Right, but they're making more money.
But they're also paying higher prices, so how have they benefited? Look, let me give you an example. Let's simplify it and say it's only me and you, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So now, let's say I work for you. You pay me $10, right? And now your product...
No, I get the theory. I get the money issue. I'm just saying the other theory, I know that you have to raise more prices, then they have to then spend more money. I understand that theory. The theory is that if everyone pitches in and pays more, it eventually becomes a more equal footing for everyone. And in that case, that is a more liberal look at it.
Yes.
Almost socialist in a way, you could say. But in a way, because we're all paying more so that everyone works out. But I'm willing to do that so some guy doesn't live on $7.50 an hour.
Right.
You know what
so
I mean?
So how many guys are living on $7.50 an hour?
Well, there's no $15 minimum wages.
You
not
see, the thing is,
a
look,
lot.
the thing is, what the market does is that it allocates the wages where they belong. In other words, a guy that flips hamburgers, anybody can do that. So if you're going to pay him $15 an hour to do that, that's a lot of money if you're going to sell hamburgers.
Yeah, that same thing is because so college is now $20,000.
Yeah, but that higher wages will put you out of business.
First of all, they've shown that higher wages like decrease having other overhead expenditures. People don't quit as often. People stay harder. They work harder. They promote better within. And it doesn't.
I question that.
That's fine. Your theory is an Adam Locke theory. Yeah. That's very, very true.
The invisible hand.
Yeah, the market will depend. Yeah. However, when you have colleges going up over 100%, you have to change something for some people to not be living in poverty.
Right. And maybe
you have to manipulate. At some point, when things are going way out of control in terms of the curve, you have to put a hand in. Or else people are now living, 1 in 4 kids are hungry,
right,
in the United States.
But we're not saying not to. I'm just saying not to exaggerate in doing that, where some people work harder than others and then they have to pay more. You know, it doesn't compute.
I don't understand what you're saying.
What I'm saying is you're looking for equality. And as far as economic equality, no, there's equal opportunity, but there's not equal like.
But I'm saying I would argue with you that there is an equal opportunity. If you're making $750, you're never going to get to a point where you could then go to college to get a better job.
No, so go and make more than $750.
How? You don't have a college education.
Then learn something else on the side, and that's what they're saying. You know, do something on the side as well.
I would assume they would also be for a higher minimum wage. Mm. I'd assume. Yeah. Only because it makes, if college is going up 160%, it only makes fair to raise the wages, mm-hmm, a little bit.
Right.
So I think if things are out of control with how high they're going in terms of...
I agree with
then
you.
Then you've got to have some manipulation for the people to actually make it in this world.
Right. But what I'm saying, though, is that people have their own choices of what to do with their lives, right? And what they're
saying,
essentially, what our guests said, no?
I don't think when you're stuck in a cycle and you can't pay or get paid enough to then get out of that cycle, I don't think you have a freedom of choice. You're sort of stuck.
No, you do have a freedom of choice, I think.
Okay.
I do. I mean, if you take action, people from adversity, a lot of people that came from adversity, you know, minorities, whatever, and have made it big, will tell you. And you know who one person is? Morgan Freeman. I've seen him in several interviews on Facebook, and he always talks about, he says, I don't agree. He says, everybody's got the same opportunity. It depends on what you do with your life, you know?
I think there are very few people that have really made it out of adversity into a phenomenal thing. I also think it's fair.
You said?
Very few. Celebrities, there's not a lot of celebrities in comparison to the rest of
America. Athletes and stuff, look at how many people have...
Yeah, but that's like 2% of the whole population of the United States.
No, but as far as of all the people that have made it, okay, don't you think many of them did come from adversity?
Yeah, but I think some, yeah, I'm saying.
I think most of them did.
I don't successful know people. How you know that, though.
No? Most of successful people, don't you think they came? Okay, how many people come from privileged families?
Many.
Okay, well, I guess we don't know how
No,
many,
that's
but,
why you can't say one or the
okay,
other.
Okay, but the thing is, he gave like an example of a 26-year-old that started with nothing.
Right, but those are not the norm.
But those are choices that you make early on in your life.
I don't think, what if that guy hadn't had the education to then buy a house? That guy had to have that education. If you don't.
Why?
Because what? If you're 26 and you don't know that and you were never taught that.
No, but he can learn that without going to school. He just listens to our guests and they tell you get something on the side.
Okay, I'm saying those are the examples and the rarities. Most people who are struggling are caught in a cycle that is very, very, very difficult that few people can fit through the cracks to get out of. Mm. Most of the people in poverty are just stuck because they aren't making enough to then get a better education to then get out of poverty. That's just like the truth about it.
Right, okay, but you equate education with necessarily financial success, or no, you're equating higher education with financial success.
That's because and most jobs right now require you to have a college education.
But the whole point that they were making is don't stay at a job if you want to earn wealth. You got to have something on the side that actually where you take risks.
I know, but I understand side hustle, but right. If you make $750 an hour, you don't have a lot of money or know how to get a loan. How are you going to do a side hustle?
You get a second job. You know, you get an internship somewhere. You know, I mean,
what if you're in the middle of the hood? There's no internships.
What do you mean in the middle of the hood?
What if you're in the middle of the hood or you're in the middle of the south side of LA and there are no internships around?
Okay. So, there's a million other reasons. I haven't really had time to think about
this. No, I'm just saying side hustle. I agree that side hustle is important, but you need to be educated to know how to do a side hustle. And if you're not giving people a chance to break that cycle, I think it's an unfair advantage.
But I think if you're in the inner city and stuff and you decide that I'm going to reach out, and because there's people that help those people, right?
What resources?
What, like social workers and stuff like that? Don't they help these people?
They're way understaffed. They have no money in that budget.
How do you know?
Because that's like the problem with California's poor. They have a huge amount of homeless with not a lot of people helping them.
Right. Okay, but that's the thing.
Resources are very low.
But don't you think there's places to go if someone wants to go for help?
I think that's
like direction?
No. I think like
guidance?
No, I think that's a real issue.
No, because you're looking for, you're looking for like almost entitlements. You know what I'm saying?
Help me. No, I'm saying their schools are literally like falling apart. So do you think there's really a guidance counselor that they can go to? Their schools are falling apart.
But all they have to do is surround themselves with some good people. They'll be able to get out of the hood.
What good people are in if you're surrounded by gangs and
stuff? So you're saying if someone is born in the hood, they have to stay there?
No, not at all. But I'm saying they probably need a little bit more to get out of the hood. You need to break this poverty cycle. Okay, otherwise, you just stay in the same thing.
Right, but whose responsibility is it? Is it everybody's? Yes. But then
I'm willing as a human being and citizen to pay a little bit more for my burger so that someone might have an opportunity to break that cycle.
But do you think they're necessarily going to do that? And what if they
would think they have a much
more... But if it's someone in the hood, what if he's going to go and spend it on drugs? He makes more money, he's going to spend it on drugs. That's if he goes to work for McDonald's. If he's
But
in
then
the
you're
hood,
presupposing, like, there's this is just a difference of economic theory. It really is.
I know.
And I
know
love it. I love it.
I love that we debate it.
Exactly.
Because that's what they do in school anyway.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. Exactly. Amen. And I understand that people don't like entitlements, but then again, you have things like the ambulance and the firemen. These are all entitlements that we all pay for.
No, these are things the government has to do for us because we can't do for ourselves.
But we pay taxes so that we're getting that.
We can't do for ourselves. I think to get out of the hood is something I can do myself. I don't need the government to do that for me.
I would love to see
that. No, really. I mean, you're looking at a minority and you want the whole government and the whole country to pay for something.
Not at all.
That people are not ambitious
enough.
All
I'm asking is for a fair minimum wage. I'm not asking for anything else.
But no, but you're saying that you think it's going to solve the problem and I don't.
I think raising to a reasonable minimum wage then all of a sudden gives an opportunity to people not to go into drug dealing, which makes probably a lot more.
That's in theory. You see.
Yeah, it's all a theory.
Yeah, but it doesn't work.
How do you know?
Because it doesn't.
We don't have $15 minimum wage. How do you know?
Because where they have raised it,
they've done really well.
Where?
Let's research it.
Okay, let's do
that. All right, I'll bring it in.
Awesome.
Done.
Great conversation for Friday, folks. Now you have another thing to think about. You see, it's not just God, man. We talk about a lot of shit. But you know what? No more F words during interviews, okay? Because these people want to take out the clip and put it on the website, and then you throw it an F bomb.
Oh!
You did.
Oh.
You did.
I didn't know we weren't supposed to do that.
No, but not during an interview. I know. I should have told you.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know.
No, you know, but that's cool. That's cool because they take it out or whatever. Or, you know, they love our show. That's the point. Anyway, Tori, thank you so much.
Anytime.
You know I love having you here.
Anytime.
Everybody have a great weekend. And I guess it's not a long weekend, so we'll be back on Monday. Bye.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Tori, only on LA Talk Radio.